comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And good day to you, whoever you are and wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. That's a guarantee. Quick announcement that is very important. Bob in California, when you volunteered my services last night to forward email to you, you left me sort of hanging in the breeze because I don't have your email address that you want it forwarded to. And I do have some email to forward to you. So you need to email me from the address you want this forwarded to, and then I can forward it to you, okay? All right, those of you who are brand new and you don't know about this, or for some of you who have been here for a long time and you know about it, but you just haven't gotten around to it yet, we have a free weekly newsletter. It is called The K-Files, and we don't use Washington, D.C. speak. In other words, when we say it's free, it really is. And all you have to do is just subscribe, and you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. We don't, by the way, give out, we don't rent out, we don't lease out, we don't loan, or any of that stuff, our email addresses to anybody. So you're not going to get spammed as a result of having subscribed to the K-Files. And I encourage you to do it. Like I say, it's free. It always has some links in there to very interesting and informative videos, links to articles, the inside scoop on what's happening here at the show. What else does it have? It's always got a free download. So, and you know, it's a good deal. It really is a good deal. And it's a good publication. So be sure, if you haven't subscribed, go to my website and subscribe. You just click where it says K-Files and then you can subscribe. And also, let me remind you of the tremendous benefits of being a member. Now, we are very soon going to be purchasing some new software. We're going to do that this week sometime, that will upgrade our members area to even a higher level. It's already pretty good, better than pretty good. It's already fairly fabulous. But what you will still get everything that's in there, which is you get to watch the show live, you get to watch the latest show, you get the K-Pods, that's our archives, chat, forum, the library of free ebooks, Video Galaxy, video chats from time to time, special programs that we do broadcast in the members area. You get all of that, but what's coming is even better, because you'll get a page. Once we get the new software installed, you'll be able to have a page in there sort of like MySpace. And so that'll be cool, and you can upload photographs and videos and things like that, just like you can at MySpace. So all of that is coming as soon as we get that software and then get it installed and set up and configured. But right now is the time to join. It's 23 cents a day, $6.95 a month. Not any reason not to do it, is there? We'll be back right after this. My My guest this evening is someone who I have known now for some time, but has never been a guest on the show before, and I will explain precisely why I have not invited her before. Her name is Melinda Leslie, and the reason that I have not invited Melinda to be on the show before is because I met her back, some months ago in Sedona. It's the first time I met her. She gave me her contact information. I met her at the Ed Grimsley Skywatch Conference. She gave me her contact information, and I lost it. And I asked several people who also knew her, and they said, you know, I haven't been in touch with her for a while. I don't remember, I don't think I've got her email address. And I looked around and looked around and looked around, and I never could find it. And then, finally, it struck me. You know, on her website, maybe there is a contact page or a link. So I went to her website, and sure enough, there it was. Melinda, I am delighted to welcome you to the Kevin Smith Show, and I apologize for losing your information.
Oh, that's all right. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm glad you eventually found me.
Well, I'll tell you what. Had you ever been to Sedona before that conference?
Oh, yeah, many times. It had actually been quite a long time, like at least 10 years since I had been there. And I was glad to see it was just as beautiful as always. But oh, gosh, you know, 20 years ago, I was going there every year.
It is absolutely stunningly beautiful there, isn't it?
Oh, it's amazing. It's one of my favorite places. I hope to live there someday, actually.
Oh, really?
So much.
Yeah. Well, maybe you will. Sometimes what we want actually does happen.
That'd be nice.
Melinda has been involved with researching and investigating UFOs for a long time. She is an abductee. She has been public with her own experiences for over 20 years. For 18 of those years, she has investigated and researched covert military and intelligence agency involvement in UFO abductions. Her research and her experiences have been written up and written about in 9 different books. She's also been very active in helping to organize and produce many UFO conferences, some of which are fairly famous, like the International UFO Congress and the Mount Shasta Convergence Conference. So she truly is one of the top people in UFO investigation and research, and I have invited Melinda to be with us this evening to talk with us about something that we hear about, and it comes in sort of phases. You know, I mean, we hear it's called MILABS or MILABS. People pronounce it different ways, but it stands for military abductions, and the reports about this seem like they sort of come in waves. Maybe it doesn't, but as far as out here on the airwaves, we hear people talk about it sort of in waves. We hear about these things happening for a while, then it kind of dies down. Then we hear about it for a while, then it dies down. Before we start, though, Melinda, I want to say, and I think you would agree with this, that when we use the term MILAB or military abductions, we don't actually mean the military. That is a term, military abductions. It's sort of a shorthand term that has come into use, and it really refers to a small number of people working in covert or black ops, and not even it doesn't even refer to everyone that works in black ops, but in a particular segment of the black ops. Do you use the term MILAB or MILAB, or do you use some other term?
Well, yeah, not so much anymore. I use it in a general sense often only because it is what this has become known as in, you know, in ufology, in the UFO community and in the abduction research community. But there's two things that I call it. One is something that everyone can usually understand when I say it, which is covert ops, because, like you said, it's, yes, there's military involved in that abductees see people in military uniforms and are taken to military bases, but there's also people in, you know, lab coats and surgical scrubs and people in suits and plain clothes and people in jumpsuits and, you know, and a variety of other things, and often in what seems to be an intelligence community involvement in this as well. So as a more of a general term that I think encapsulates all the various, you know, groups or individuals that might be involved is the term covert ops. And then I call my research, I call specifically rehabs as opposed to calling it my lab research. And that's a term that, of course, it means re-abduction on one thing, where you're re-abducted by humans as opposed to aliens, or subsequently to an alien experience, you maybe have human involvement in these covert ops groups. So that's rehabs, meaning re-abduction. But the other thing is rehabs, meaning REABs, or reverse engineered abductees, which I think really addresses why this is going on, and we can get into that much more as the show goes on. But so I call it rehabs, meaning the reabduction and reverse engineered abductees. And a more general term that I think if I could get the ufology community to really use is covert ops, because that addresses, I think it's more layered, and again, it's not just the military. And also, it's not the military as most people generally think of it. If you have family members that serve, or you yourself have served, that's not what I'm talking about at all. We're talking about, like you said, covert ops, black ops, highly secretive. Those branches of the military that run the crash retrieval programs, that run the reverse engineering of the technology programs. So there is a military aspect to all that, but to say it's your, you know, your grandfather's military or your dad's military or your military, no, not even close. So again, I think my labs put such a twist on it, a spin on it, of it being military, and also cast the military in such a negative light that I don't think it's any longer appropriate for describing what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think covert.
Well, I agree with you. I want to say now I used on the site the term my lab because I knew that's something that everyone in the audience would understand what we were going to talk about. It's a phrase they're accustomed to, but you know, I want to say at the outset that, you know, I have the greatest respect for our military, and I applaud them. And, you know, I've said many times, both on the air and in writing, when you stop and think about, here's somebody that doesn't even know me, that has their life on the line right now as I speak, to protect me and to protect my right to say what I'm going to say. All I can do is stand in silent awe. These are just fabulous people. And so my hat is off to the military. And I want to get that straight, because we do use the term my lab, but it doesn't really refer to the military. And tonight we'll call it covert ops. All right, now you've dealt... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I agree completely with what you just said and have those same sentiments, which is another reason why I'm uncomfortable with the term MILAB or MILAB. And it is said both ways, MILAB meaning military abduction, or MILAB is just a, you know, mm-hmm. way of pronouncing it. It's just an acronym, M-I-L-A-B. But and that's just, you know, like I was saying, an acronym for military abduction. But again, I agree with everything you just said. I've always been uncomfortable with the term, and I think it also falls short of explaining what's going on and describing who's involved, because again, it suggests that it's all military, And another thing that just drives me absolutely crazy is it suggests to a lot of people out there that all abductions are only the military. In other words, there aren't any ET abductions. There aren't any UFO abductions. It's all military. And that is such an incorrect picture of this. It frustrates me. It's maddening. It's one of the reasons that a lot of the researchers in ufology, but mostly in the abduction community, in the abduction research community, a lot of them hesitate to either get into this. They've all got cases of it, you know, but they don't address it. They don't address it publicly. They don't address it in their writings. Yeah, a few do. We can get into that. But you know, the majority and overall, there's a lack of addressing this. And part of that is because of this idea of people having this misconstrued concept that you're suggesting it's all military and there aren't ET abductions. And in my research, this covert ops involvement is happening because these people are real alien abductees. That is the
okay. Now, and I want to get into that first. Let's talk about alien abductees. You are one.
Yes. Yes.
All right. When did this begin happening to you? Just give us a little thumbnail sketch of your experiences with alien abduction.
Kevin, I want to say really quick. You're breaking up a little bit over the line to me as far as the way I'm hearing you. I can make out what you're saying. I just want to make sure that I'm not breaking up on your line.
If you were, I would tell you.
Okay. Well, you are a little, but I can deal with it. So we won't rock the boat. We'll keep going. So anyways, one more time, your question, I'm sorry.
Give us a thumbnail sketch of your experience with alien abduction, your personal experience.
Oh, goodness. Well, in 1989, so this is kind of, I'll give everyone a little overview real quick of how I got into this and then my alien stuff, just for clarity. In 1989, a friend of mine turned me on to a radio program she was listening to that had been talking about Native American stuff. And all of a sudden, and back then I didn't have an interest in UFOs, neither did she, but this program was a program called Billy Goodman's The Happening, a radio show you may be familiar with, Billy Goodman's The Happening out of Las Vegas. And she turned me on to this, and within the first 2 weeks of listening to it, the Lazar story broke, the Area 51 story with Bob Lazar telling his real estate agent and friend Gene Huff, who told his friend John Lear, and the rest is UFO history. I can get into that if anyone if you want me to, but I think you know. People started going out to Area 51 to see these test flights that Lazar had talked about and that John Lear had talked about on this show. And within 2 weeks of listening to the program, before I knew it, we were packed in a car and driving out there to go see these things. That's how fast it happened. And it was right when it broke. And they said the test flights were happening every Wednesday. And the radio show had two busloads of people go out there and invited anyone to come out. My friend and I lived in Southern California. And we drove from Southern California to Vegas and then out to infamous Area 51 and to the town of Rachel and the black mailbox and Highway 375 and the whole thing. Well, we had sightings, and we had multiple sightings, good ones, and it was really exciting. We ended up going back 2 weeks later because we needed our fix, you know. Once you have a bunch of sightings, you're like, I want more, you know. And we went back 2 weeks later, and then we went back a month after that. So basically, in a two-month period, we had taken three trips out there. All the trips lasted more than one night of viewing, you know, multiple nights of viewing, and we had sightings every time. Well, something about having those sightings unlocked something in my memory, literally like putting a key in and turning it, because I started to, at night, so again, this would have been going into, September and October of 1989 is what we're talking about, or actually August, September, October of 89. And what happened is I ended up having dreams at night about childhood experiences. Now, I wasn't necessarily dreaming of an alien abduction per se, but I was remembering, for instance, my grandmother had a house in Yucca Valley in Southern California, the same place with giant rock and that's famous for the contactee flap in the 50s, same place. But this was in the 60s, because I was born in early 60s. and we're out there, and I'm staying there, and I go down one day for a nap, and this is coming out in my dreams here, where I'm put to bed one day, one afternoon, taking a nap. An adult stayed with me, and little kids came to the bedroom window and asked me to come out and play with them. And the adult was asleep, and I snuck out. The thing is, in my dream, I remembered I walked through the sliding glass door. In other words, I didn't open it. I walked through the glass and went out and played with these kids. And then other dreams. So that was just one. But I had multiple dreams start happening where I was remembering childhood experiences. But as in my conscious memory then, when I would wake up and think about these strange dreams, I would then have more memory come forward, and I was remembering childhood experiences. And then, so here we are in late 89, I start to remember multiple experiences as a child and one as a teen, and then all of a sudden I realized I was having current time abduction experiences, meaning I had, for instance, in late 89, I went to bed one night. I had a roommate at the time, had an interesting conversation with her, had gone into my own room to go to bed, sat on my bed. We had had a kind of an interesting conversation that got me kind of a little bit agitated in such a way that I sat on my bed and I did a quick little like visualization meditation technique I had done.
Okay, Melinda, we have to take a break, so we'll pick up right there. Don't forget where you are. And we'll pick up right there when we come back on the other side of the break that's taking over now. We'll be back, folks, with Melinda Leslie right after this. And we are back. Melinda, I had to cut you off right in mid-sentence because the break was taking over. You sat down on the edge of your bed and began to meditate, and then I cut you off. So if you'll pick up there and move forward, we'll continue.
Okay. Well, that's what you call a cliffhanger. I just sat there and did a quick little visualization just to kind of calm myself so I'd be able to, you know, sleep good and go to sleep good. And I had to work the next morning, so I set my alarm next to me, and I looked at the time. I knew I was going to bed a little later than I wanted to, but I was very clear on exactly what time it was. Set the alarm, did my little exercise, turned to turn off the light, but as I turned to reach for the light next to me on the bedstand to turn it off, I glanced back and looked at the clock, and I'm glad I did, because I took a double take and realized 2.5 hours had gone by. And there's no way I was sitting on my bed for 2.5 hours. I mean, I was sitting on my bed, I would have said less than 5 minutes, maybe 3 minutes,
mm-hmm.
You know, just a quick little thing. And then, you know, I turned, and I always kind of double-check my alarm anyways right before I turn out the light. So that's what I was doing. I was double-checking my alarm before turning out the light. And like I said, 2.5 hours had gone by. And so I sat on my bed and I said, okay, you weren't sitting here for 2.5 hours. So what could have happened? And I sat on my bed and I kept getting this visual image I couldn't get out of my mind of these three gray alien standing next to me, next to the bed. Kind of one a little taller, one a little shorter, one a little shorter than that. strangely enough, that's what I remembered. And I'm just like, oh, come on, this is crazy, you know. And then I ended up pushing it out of my mind and saying, well, this is ridiculous. Nothing's happened, blah, blah, blah. You know, you just need to get to sleep if you're going to get any for work tomorrow or whatever. And so I went to bed. And the next day I went to work, but I actually had bruises on my body that I didn't know how I got. That's very typical. And some marks, and didn't know what was going on. But then it was actually 2 days later that my roommate said, "Oh, the other night, I thought there was a prowler in the house, and I'm wondering if that's why you were up." And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" And she said, "Well, after our discussion," she said, I sat in bed and read for a while to calm myself down. You know, she said she sat in bed and read, and she said, I got up, you know, because I thought I heard, we had a two-story, like, townhouse at the time, and she said, I thought I heard someone downstairs, and she went downstairs, and there was no one there, and came back up, and she said, "Is that why you were up?" I said, "Well, what do you mean? What makes you think I was up? I went to bed right away." And she said, "Well, your light was on in your room, and so I looked, and you weren't there." And I said, "What?" Apparently, she had seen, she had her bedroom door open to the hallway, had a light on next to her reading, but the hallway was dark. And she saw, she ended up later telling me that she saw basically an alien, a gray, in the hallway. It went through the hallway and went through my closed door. She didn't bring that up at first, but what she did say is when she went downstairs and there wasn't anyone there, and she saw my light on in my room, she knocked on my door a little. There was no answer, so she opened my door, and I wasn't there. Now, all I remember is having our discussion, going into my room, you know, finishing getting ready for bed, sitting on my bed, and then turning out the light and going to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So for her to say I wasn't in my room, so here I had a roommate witness an alien in the hallway and witness me being gone and my light being on for that whole time. And so that happened. So here I obviously had had a current time experience and my memory of these three grays staying next to the bed that I couldn't shake.
Did it disturb you any? I mean, were you frightened of these grays when you thought about them?
Well, yeah. Well, at first I just didn't believe it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I actually thought, long story short, is I ended up meeting a researcher who recommended a hypnotherapist to me. I was having these conscious memories return. I actually, while out at Area 51, had become friends with researcher Bill Hamilton, had met him out there.
Mm-hmm.
And got to know him. Well, he also does some regression. And one night I met him just to have dinner and talk about stuff, and because we'd become friends. And he convinced me of needing a regression. So my first regression was actually with him. And it was very, very good. And what was interesting is not only did I go back to... Actually, we looked at that very experience that had happened that night. That was the one that he chose. He said, we need to figure out what happened there. But this was like months after the experience. But anyway, so he did that regression. And here I was recalling what had happened in that experience, which was a whole bunch of things that are fairly typical now in abduction research. The taking of eggs, testing me for an emotional experience, my reaction to violence, that kind of thing. Actually, all that happened in that very experience. And something that's now known in abduction research, which is what they call black box experience, when an abductee is handed this black box, sometimes with compartments and stuff. And I'd never, ever heard of anything like that at that time. And I knew nothing about the subject.
Mm-hmm.
And now I know that something I experienced that was that strange is actually fairly common. I know, you know, 20 years later, I know that. But so here, Bill regressed me over that. But in that regression, too, not only was I recalling that experience, But suddenly, something was different. And Bill had asked me during the regression, how old are you? Without missing a beat, I said 15. So suddenly I jumped to being 15 years old and having an experience where eggs were removed, but at the time I didn't understand that's what was happening at 15, and I was emotional and very upset and crying and saying, what are they doing to me, and they're hurting me and all this kind of stuff. And that's when I was 15. So that was a very frightening experience that I was suddenly remembering, and Bill knew something had changed. And that's why he said, how old are you? And I said, 15. And he told me afterwards, after he brought me out and we talked about it for a while, he said he could clearly tell that I was much younger all of a sudden. And so here, in my regression with him, I recalled two different experiences. One that had happened in current time as an adult, where I was fairly calm. They, like I said, they did this thing where they tested my reaction to violence. What did I think of somebody being shot? And I was very angry at them in the experience. And then,
did they actually shoot somebody?
Very confusing. I'm sorry?
Did they actually shoot someone in front of you?
No, they didn't. They made me think they were going to. And then how would I react if they were going to do that?
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't actually.
I see.
Thank God.
Yeah.
But in that experience, and then this thing with the black box, and then, you know, but all in all, I was fairly calm in the memory. It was more like, this is strange. I don't know if this is real. I kept saying in the regression, I must be making this up. And yet, I was saying things that I had never heard of before that are actually common for other people, and, you know, et cetera. So, and yet here, then all of a sudden, I had this very frightening experience at 15 years old. I was very emotional and, you know, very frightened. And so I had two different types of experiences, and I remembered both of them in that regression. Well, as opposed to this providing me with lots of answers, it caused more, you know, confusion rather than anything. And I went, oh gosh, it had to have been at least 6 months, maybe even, you know, 10 months or more, you know, a year, before I got another regression. And as I started to say, as a researcher that, and who I'd met through some friends, recommended a hypnotherapist to me that works with, that's worked with hundreds of abductees. And it took me about a year to get up the courage to go see her, but I continued to have experiences, and I continued to have memories surface of past stuff as well as having current stuff. Now, not a lot. It wasn't like an experience a week, but, you know, in that, you know, however long that was, nearly a year's time, I probably had another five experiences maybe, you know. So, and I really thought I was losing my mind. I said, this is nuts. Obviously, this isn't what's happening to me. I must be going through some kind of psychological thing, you know. I didn't know what to make of it. I thought, you know, this is nuts. This can't be happening to me. And so this person that I went and saw was a full-fledged psychologist, a doctor of psychology. That the hypnotherapist that was recommended to me was also a doctor of psychology. And when I went and saw her, I said, well, obviously this isn't going on. This isn't real, and I need to find out what am I going through that's producing this, and is it just that I'm fantasizing because I have these sightings, you know, kind of thing.
Well, and that's a logical question.
Yeah, and so she said, well, let's see. And she proceeded to then start to do regressions with me. And also, I was having scars appear overnight, scoop marks, the infamous, you know, with no explanation of how I'd gotten them, bruises and handprints on me with no explanation of how I got them. And she ended up telling me she thought I was a really strong case because I was such a strong evidence case. And so she was telling me, you're such a strong evidence case. You need to understand this is absolutely happening to you. And she, you know, and she said, look, you know, I can reassure you as a psychologist that you're not crazy. And that, you know, and she knew I was relating stuff in the experiences that I'd never heard of before, because at that time, too, when I first started seeing her, she had said, don't read books on this and stuff, you know. And so I wasn't, and I didn't know a lot about it. So what was coming up in my memories, I just kept thinking, well, this is crazy. You know, my mind's producing this. I can't be remembering something real, you know. And so, and anyways, and then I ended up working with her for many years after that, on and off, you know. And you know, and found out I was an abductee. And
right now, how did you move from that into researching my labs or covert ops? What was the transition to that?
Sure. Well, in 1993, well, first, there was something that had happened in the summer of 90, of July. Myself and two friends, two male friends, took a road trip. Long story short is we're actually going out to an area known as a local UFO hotspot. It was actually the Tehachapi area in Southern California, for those who might know. And we had been following the fact that there had been a lot of sightings and things happening out there. So we took a road trip one night to drive out there, and one of my friends lived in La Mirada, and we went over what was the Angeles Crest Highway up through the forest over the mountain as a way to get out to the Lancaster-Palmdale area where Tehachapi is.
All right, we're going to have to step away for a break, and we will be back, folks, right after this, more with Melinda Leslie. Welcome back. My guest this evening is Melinda Leslie. And Melinda, you were telling us about this road trip you were taking.
Yes, another cliffhanger. no, but I was driving with these two friends of mine. We were going out to an area known as a hotspot. And we suddenly had about a 3-hour period of missing time. And all three of us... not so much right away, but over days and in weeks following the event, we each had some conscious recall of what had happened. Of course, we had an alien abduction, and then each of us, many months later, got regressed over this experience with the same hypnotherapist that I was working with. She regressed all three of us, of course, separately, and it took a couple months for us to get through multiple regressions each. And but she ended up saying we each recalled the identical same experience, the identical same alien abduction experience. We were driving our car. We got stopped on the road, and we each got taken from the car and on board a ship and had a series of things happen, some medical and some psychological. And, but in that experience, too, we had each seen a man in military uniform standing in the background, not like another abductee, though, like he was there in some official capacity, like he was there watching what was happening. And kind of like standing, parade rest, kind of semi at attention. And we all thought it was weird that we saw this guy there and he was out of place, and what do you make of that? And it was such kind of a strange thing that I pushed that out of my mind and didn't know what to make of it, neither did my friends. And then in 1993, so we're jumping from 90 to 93, in August of 93 and then in November of 93, I had two experiences at the hands of covert ops. The first one in 93, the first one in August of 93, I was... taken from my apartment, and at that one, it seemed like I had been taken by graves by aliens, and at some point was handed over to military personnel. Now, this is really, this as strange as it sounds, it's actually common in these experiences. Joe Mentaldo, researcher Joe Mentaldo, actually calls it being handed off, the handoff. Mm-hmm. So quite often these experiences involve being taken by aliens but handed off to humans at some point. And that was this particular experience. And but in the experience, I ended up having a medical procedure done in a hazmat, hazardous material handling clean room environment, this tented environment with the different technicians and doctors in there wearing these suits, like clean room suits, like a white hood with a, you know, window on the front that they could see out, you know, white hood and a full covered body with booties and gloves on and everything. And there was a whole team of people working on me in this environment. And it was on a base, and I was taken on an elevator ride.
Was the elevator ride up or down?
Well, that it was down. It was an underground base. I should clarify that. And I was actually at one point driven around. This is strange. All this is strange. But in the back of an empty semi-truck, of all things, which I believe I was being driven around in circles all over this location, which was in the desert. I believe it was done possibly just to confuse or disorient me, or, you know, so I had no clue where I was.
What do you think all this was about? I mean,
well, that particular one was a medical procedure. It was very personal. I don't want to go into detail in it, but it was a, well, okay. In abduction lore, there's something known as missing fetus,
yeah.
Which is not common for all abductees, but for many female abductees, and they may know themselves to be pregnant or believe themselves to be pregnant, and then suddenly the fetus is gone, and they may have a memory of having an alien abduction, having it removed. In this particular experience, in this clean room environment, I had an abortion-type procedure. I didn't know what kind of procedure I was having at the time. I did not have any knowledge of being pregnant at the time, other than I had had some very strange female problems leading up to this, and a skipped period and those kinds of things. So I ended up many years later speaking for I speak at conferences and events and stuff, and this was a particular lecture I was doing for MUFON in Minnesota MUFON, and they had someone on their board that was a gynecological surgeon, and I didn't know that at the time, but the gentleman from their board came up after my program and introduced himself and said he wanted to talk to me and asked me a bunch of questions, because apparently I mentioned something about this particular experience in the context of my talk, and he asked me a bunch of questions, and he ended up saying, I can tell you what kind of procedure you had. Now, I forget what he called it, but it was a specific kind of early-term abortion procedure, according to him. And I had no knowledge of that. And he said, did you have any awareness of being pregnant? I said, no. And then he asked me about symptoms I had leading up to it and the physical symptoms I had afterwards. And he said it all matched. And he said, well, you were, but there may have been a problem with it, and it was terminated early because there was a problem, and it was terminated very early. And he said it's a particular type of procedure that's done when there's a complication and a problem, and he said it probably meant there was a problem with this or that. And he grilled me with questions, and he said he tried to actually mislead me, where he asked me medical kind of questions and did they do this or did they do that, and he purposely would say it wrong, so I would say no, it wasn't like that, it was just like this, or, you know. And he said even when I corrected him, I was correct. And so he said, I'm here to tell you you've had that procedure, and I can tell you have no knowledge and no medical knowledge of that kind of procedure. And what can I say? I mean, he said I had a real thing happen. So so I believe that that's what that one was about. Then jumping ahead to, that was August of 93. And then I had a totally different kind of experience in November of 93, where I was awoken one night, again from the apartment which I lived at the time, by two men in camouflage ripping the covers off my bed. like just pulling all my covers off at once. Of course, that woke me up.
Now, did you still have a roommate at this time?
No. For both of these experiences, I had my own small studio apartment in the Southern California area,
mm-hmm.
And it was just a small studio, and in this one, I'm awoken by these guys ripping the covers off my bed, and one of them has a dropper, and it's an oily substance in my mouth, of which I start gagging on because it was this really bitter, oily substance. And next thing I know is they're lifting me onto a stretcher that they've kind of laid somewhat across the bed. And I'm carried around the room on this stretcher, and I pass out. And in that experience, jumping way ahead, I'm eventually taken again to an underground base. But this time I'm specifically there to be interrogated about a piece of alien technology I apparently saw. And apparently in some previous experience that I don't remember, they'd given me some kind of post-hypnotic suggestion to remember a specific thing. And apparently I saw what they wanted me to see, and they seemed to be very pleased. And they had me draw and sketch while they questioned me this particular piece of a machine or something, you know, some small thing that they needed to know exactly how does this and this go together or something, and apparently I knew. And so it was specifically about a piece of alien technology, and I was questioned about it. And then in these procedures, there's a lot of threatening that happens, and, you know, threats and warning kind of stuff. And definitely having your life threatened is part and parcel for these experiences. And so, you know, a lot of that happened, and a lot of, hate to be cliche, but, you know, brainwashing techniques to have you repress the memory and forget it. And that experience, I recalled a little bit about it consciously afterwards, and then had regressions for it. And then over the years, many years later, had some more regressions from a different hypnotherapist.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Melinda Leslie, and we're talking about her experiences, her encounters with alien abduction, as well as what has come to be known as MILAB, or military abductions related with aliens. Tonight, we're referring to them as covert ops. For those of you who missed the first hour, my deepest sympathy. For those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. And Melinda, you were telling about these guys in camouflage. So instead of men in black, MIBs, you had MIC, men in camouflage. And they had what you had told us is that they had sort of pre-programmed you to notice a piece of alien technology and to then be able to report on what you saw when they picked you up. Is that correct?
Well, yes. It wasn't the men in camouflage asking me. Those were just the guys in my room who
right.
who drugged me and put me on the stretcher and took me somewhere. I changed hands many times. I ended up being with what I believe was a naval captain, and two older gentlemen who ended up leaving the room that were naval, in kind of naval full dressed dark green uniforms with lots of the bells and whistles on them, and then two guys in lab coats, and the guys in lab coats were the ones administering the drugs that were happening. But in this experience, I ended up, being specifically interrogated about alien technology. And my initial memory was it was more generic about what alien technology I had seen and about a propulsion system I had seen. But later in multiple regressions combined with some deep personal work that I did over all the years, I now know it was a specific piece. Unfortunately, I can't remember much about it other than it was some small part that they really wanted me to see, and I guess I saw.
And you have found in your research and talking with other people that have experienced these covert ops or my labs, you have found a number of them, I think, that were interrogated the same way, indicating that perhaps the purpose of the My Labs is gathering intel from those who are actually being abducted by aliens.
Yes. Those two experiences that I just related from August, the medical one in August of 93, and then the one for alien technology in November of 93 are the things that really caused me to start looking at this as far as I was self-examining, you know, what has actually happened to me? Has this happened to other people? And then I started to meet other abductees as I was willing to maybe more, you know, talk about my experience and talk to some researchers to find out if they had cases that they knew of, and also to read some books or somebody recommended a book that maybe another abductee had written about this. Started a huge learning curve in realizing I was far from alone, that a lot of abductees were having this. And so that was in, you know, 93. And then came to terms with the fact that in 90 I had that experience with taking with two friends and we had had stuff happen. And then my old roommate from years before, I had remained in contact with, I didn't live with anymore at that time, but I saw her somewhere, and we connected up, and she ended up saying, "Oh, I'm so glad you know this now." And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" Well, she reported an experience. She had a 14-year-old daughter, long story short, that lived with us very briefly. She had been separated from her husband. The daughter had lived with her dad, but they were having a fight or something, so she came and lived with her mom for a couple months. During that time, apparently her and her daughter in the room next door said they were awoken during the night on more than one occasion by, quoting her, "military men shouting orders at you in your room and you crying and saying, 'No, no, no, I don't want to go.'" And I have no memory of that. So here they're saying that I had had these experiences back in 1990 of military men shouting orders at me and my crying and pleading no. And they were scared to death. In fact, the daughter, now I was told she went back to live with her dad because she missed her dad or whatever. It turns out, now I find out that what had actually happened is she moved out because what was happening to me scared her so bad. The 14-year-old was so freaked out by what was happening to me that she moved out. But I wasn't told that back then.
Well, I think it's understandable, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So as I started to say, I am far from alone in having this, and it started me on a path of researching it and learning of other cases, of which now, I've lost count, but over 100 cases for sure, and I've talked to researchers who have hundreds of cases amongst themselves, and I know many of the known abductees who've come public with their experiences, who have shared this part of their experience either in their writings and or in their presentations, and interviewed them. So I have, you know, an extensive database of cases and information on this, and I'm in constant contact with other researchers and abductees who have these experiences. And every time I lecture or I do a radio program, I get more cases and I meet more people. And many of these cases are just so... When I say I get cases, I'm not a hypnotherapist or any kind of therapist. I'm an experiencer, and I'm a researcher and investigator. So I research and investigate cases. I interview the people about their experiences. I try to be very evidence-based and gather the evidence and document it. And there's extensive evidence for this.
All right. Well, let me ask you about parts of this.
Sure.
You can imagine, I don't investigate or research this material. I host a talk show, but I've been doing this show now. On the 11th of this month, it'll be 10 years I've been doing this show, and I've talked to a lot of people, lots and lots of people. And
congratulations.
Well, thank you. But one of the things that I hear when I hear about one of these incidents involving military, a very common description of the uniform they see is it is black, and it has been described to me as black BDU, which is battle dress uniform, or black fatigues, or a black Navy jumpsuit.
Yeah.
With a black hat. Does that comport with what you've heard?
Well, yes, some of them. I have to tell you, in my research, now I've heard a few different things. Like, people have seen some Marines uniforms and some Air Force stuff. That would all kind of be expected. But the majority, and far and above, the majority of the descriptions I get, if a uniform is described, because a lot of people just are seeing people in scrubs and people in lab coats and men in suits, and you know, but if a military uniform is seen, far and above, I'm getting accounts of naval uniforms. But a lot of what you just described, or not a lot, some of what you just described could fall under the category of naval uniforms.
Mm-hmm. Well, they do have the Navy does have a black jumpsuit type uniform that they use. But
yeah.
Now, you know, the Navy, a lot of people don't know this because all the attention seems to be on the Air Force or on the Marines, you know, in the movies and so forth. But folks, the premier, and I mean the largest military that we have in the United States of America, is the U.S. Navy. It's the biggest, it's the most powerful, it's the most extensive, and as a matter of fact, in terms of ships at sea, it's bigger than the next 17 navies put together. Did you know that?
Yeah, I knew that, but that's because I happen to pay attention to these things because of my research.
It is gigantic, gigantic.
You're absolutely right, you're absolutely right. And it's our oldest military.
Yes.
It's our oldest military, and as far as U.S. goes, or maybe even worldwide for that matter, because everything was done at sea. And I wasn't surprised to get so many accounts of naval uniforms in this research because, Kevin, with you following ufology as much as you do and the history of it and the history of the cover-up, I'm sure you're aware that a lot of the history of this, the cover-up, the documentation, it seems that the management of this has long been entwined with naval intelligence.
Yes.
And for instance, you know, I mentioned Lazar coming out and that having, you know, have to do with my originally going out to Area 51 having sightings. But he said he worked for the Navy and that he was paid by the Navy when he was out there. It's long been known that a lot of the services and things that happen out there are operated by the Navy. It's come up in other ways in the history of ufology and in the management of this information. The Navy and naval intelligence has been a big part of it. And so I wasn't necessarily surprised when I was getting the naval uniforms. It almost became expected, knowing that they have an involvement in this subject and have in the cover-up all along, that it seemed to be confirming. And then there were other uniforms seen, too. And a lot of times, abductees describe a uniform, and they don't necessarily know what they're describing. You know, if they can remember a color, if they can remember a style. You know, I ended up having to do a bunch of research and get a hold of a bunch of military uniform catalogs and stuff, so when I'd hear stuff from people, I'd be able to kind of say, well, that sounds like this or like this. And you know, a lot of times they'll say, oh, well, it's Air Force, but then they go on to describe it, and they're describing a naval uniform, you know, kind of thing.
What about insignias?
I have to do some research, and then it also requires an abductee to have good memory and good conscious recall to be able to even know what they saw.
All right. What about insignias? Do they see any service insignias?
Usually no insignias are seen. Almost a suspicious lack of insignia, not suspicious almost, but a very deliberate lack of insignia, lack of markings on uniforms and vehicles and stuff, although things are seen. So more often than not, they'll say, no, there was no insignia, there was no markings, you know. But yet there are some things that are seen, and it's kind of been all over the place. Some interesting combinations of patterns. I'd have to do some research into military symbols and things that are used to, you know, see if there's some commonality. It's kind of, again, not that many people have remembered, and when they do, it's kind of all over the place. Although there's been some similarities, so there's been some things, but nothing where anyone is, you know, where it's clearly, oh, that's an Air Force insignia or that's a naval insignia. They're mostly like stuff that's like, wow, that's interesting. I've never heard or seen anything like that. You know,
one of the things that people have told me when I've asked them about this, you know, as they call in and talk about it, they've told me no insignias, and I ask them, okay, if there were no insignias, did you see an American flag on their shoulder? All U.S. military wear an American flag on their shoulder.
Uh-huh.
And they say no.
Yeah.
Okay, and so that is pretty curious. If these guys are American military, and here's the point I'm going to get to. If they are military, you would think they would at least have the American flag on the shoulder. Now, maybe they are military, but here's a possibility. They may not be military at all. They may be something else and just wearing uniforms. If they were wearing uniforms, and this is why I say this. If they're wearing uniforms and they're not actually military, and they, for instance, put on a Navy uniform, if they were to do that with Navy insignia that says they're U.S. Navy, and they're not really, that's a felony.
Yes, I understand that. But I have to tell you, in the majority of these cases, if the abductee has some clear recall of where they've been taken,
mm-hmm.
They're usually known government and military facilities. So I've been able to identify certain military bases and naval bases and Air Force bases and stuff that come up consistently
mm-hmm.
in the research, where it seems that there are specific locations where people are being taken to, and they are functioning, operating military bases.
Yeah, but
and
on those bases,
taken,
you have to understand, on those bases are a great many people who are not military. And
I mean, where they're seeing what seems to be standard military people, you know, there's a lot of people involved in a lot of activities on these bases. People sometimes are seeing a variety. It's not like you're taking just one little thing and you see one or two people and that's it. It's not like that. It's like you're taken here, then you're taken here, and you're taken here, and the guys who pick you up are different than the guys that drive you, or different than the guys on the helicopter, different than the guys doing the procedures. And then you go down the hallway and you see the security doors and the guards going down the hallway, and then you're taken through the guard shack, and you're, you know, so it's a variety of stuff that people are seeing. And the majority of it is like standard military procedures, activities on known military bases and installations.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I know we started off the program saying this is covert ops and not your regular military. I think it's so compartmentalized that, yes, it's military personnel, but they're in this compartmentalized black ops procedure that is not, I don't believe, being directed by the military per se. I believe.
Well, it may be, but let me throw some things in here. Mm-hmm. Now that we have Iraq, now that that's all in our minds and it's been in our face now for years, we know that a huge number of people carrying guns in Iraq are contractors.
Yes.
Okay, so are they U.S. government? No, not technically they're not.
Yeah.
They're contractors. All right.
And same with this.
Same with this.
Contractors are seen in relationship to this as well.
The CIA, a great many of the field operatives out there around the world are not CIA. They are contractors. Now, they have former military. A lot of these guys are former military guys and gals. And they're contracting. They have a contract with the CIA. They do not officially work for the CIA. You can have the same sort of thing here. Many, many people who do these kinds of contracts are former military. And so to wear a military uniform, but without the insignia, but still have all the military bearing and order, to me, that sounds like we're dealing with contractors.
And in some cases, I believe we are. I have to tell you, the truth is, most abductees do not have enough recall of their experience to know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying I'm having military bases reported to me in military uniforms. Who's wearing those? I can't say. The abductee can't say. I can't even say from my own experience. I'll have to ask more abductees if they see a flag patch on the shoulder. I haven't ever really asked that. Is it just overlooked? But there is in many of these cases, like you yourself said, a lack of insignia.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure what to make of that. And I wasn't necessarily aware that all uniforms have the flag on them. I'm going to need to ask some military people if standard Navy tans, which you're seeing a lot, short tan shirt, tan pants, that's seen so much in these experiences, would those guys in summer tans always have a flag on their shoulder too?
Well, if they're in a T-shirt, no. But if they are in any type of official uniform, they are under the flag.
I'm going to have to ask. Now, I can say that guys in dress green had all the bells and whistles, and I remembered in great detail the hat they were wearing and what was on it, and I've verified the existence of that, and I know nothing about military uniforms except for the research I've now done to verify that. I did not notice, but that just means I didn't look at their shoulder. They could have had a flag, I don't know. But he had all the other pins and stuff on, and a naval airman pin, and he had pins and stuff that I was able to research. So in the case of the guy in the dress uniform, he had everything on, and it all matched up from what I've been able to research. Now again, I don't remember the specifics of the pins and stuff, but I remember one particular metallic pin with the wings on either side, and I researched it later because I said, "Oh, is that an Air Force pin, or what's that?" Because at first I thought he's Marine or he's Army because he's got this dark green uniform on. Only to learn later that in naval-run land bases they wear that green uniform. It's very common, kind of thing. So I did research to find that. But I will have to start asking if they see the patch on the shoulder. That's interesting.
Which way was the
are going to tell me, you know what, I just didn't get a good look. I have a feeling that's what I'm going to hear, because usually they're not even able to tell you. They're like, they're wearing military uniform, what did it look like? Well, I'm not sure. What color? Blue or tan, and that's all they remember, so to get that kind of recall. But there are some abductees that occasionally have great detail in their recall and remembered studying the uniform, and those that did, I'm going to have to start asking, did they have a flag on their shoulder? Because that's very interesting. I've never thought about that.
Here's another thing. If they're wearing the flag, this implies that they're acting on the orders of, and therefore are under the regulations of, the United States of America, and under the oath that they took to uphold and defend the Constitution. If they're wearing that flag, that announces the oath.
Yeah.
Now, if they're not wearing that flag, then they may be a contractor who's taken no such oath.
Well, they're calling each other military names, ranks, and insignias.
Oh, well, yeah, but, you know, security companies do that, too. I can take you to a private security company right here in Phoenix that has colonels.
Yeah, it may be, Kevin, but I think we're kind of getting off track of the main point.
Well, no, I don't think so, and let me explain why. If these are contractors, they are capable of breaking any kind of law to get this done, and they are capable of doing anything to you without having to fear court-martial.
Possibly. I mean, I'm not aware, and I don't even think the contractors can break the Constitution. But, you know, that's to the degree the military laws apply or don't apply to the military subcontractors and stuff. I really would have to ask a bunch of people. I can't even go there. I have no idea. In all fairness, I really don't know enough about
it. Well, they may
see. These are interesting points you're bringing up. Very interesting.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll open the telephone lines for you folks when we come back. We are back. My guest this evening is Melinda Leslie, and during the break she told me there were a couple of points she wanted to highlight or clarify, and then we'll open up the telephone lines. The lights are blinking, so I know a lot of you have questions or comments. Okay, Melinda, go ahead.
Well, I just want to clarify for the audience, you know, we're talking so much about the re-abduction aspect here of being picked up by military or covert ops or agents and being taken to underground bases or facilities and having interrogations and medical procedures. That, granted, that's a portion of this. I want to read through a quick list just for the audience's sake of what all happens in the research that I do as far as what denotes a covert ops involvement, because that's just one portion of it. So I'm going to read through this really quick. These are the kind of things that happen to people in my research. Abductees are being watched or followed in their home or workplace, having their home or workplace under surveillance. They have black helicopter harassment or surveillance. One abductee I know has over 650 photos of helicopter harassment that she's had. And these often have forward-looking infrared, boom mics, ball cameras on them, you know, all sorts of equipment on them. Abductees have threats made to themselves and to their family and friends. There can be phone interruptions and harassing or intimidating or even threatening phone calls. Obviously, you can have your email or your snail mail tampered with, computer hacking. People's computers will be hacked into and only their files dealing with their experiences or with this part of their experience will be messed with, and everything else will be left alone, that kind of thing. And I have a lot of cases. Everything I'm saying here, I have lots of cases of. And then there's in-person, direct, face-to-face confrontations and warnings. And, of course, the infamous Men in Black experiences. A lot of abductees can be approached even at their home in, you know, conscious, completely, fully, you know, waking daylight, have guys come in suits and threaten them and warn them, this kind of thing, very common. And then there's illegal break-ins to property. Homes and vehicles are broken into, often with police reports showing that there's been a break-in. Underground bases are visited, and advanced technology is seen in them. And then there's abductions by ETs with human military personnel present, or where you're handed over, as I described earlier, where you can be handed over to military personnel. There's abductions by human military, where you're taken and brought back by people, but there can be ETs present. For instance, you can have an abduction to an underground base and have predominantly human experience, but see some ETs present. And then there are abductions by humans only, human covert ops only, without any ETs present, but where you're specifically, like I was in my November experience, where, or 93, where I was interrogated about technology. There were no ETs present in any of that. It was completely a military experience, but it was obviously about the ET technology, and that was why. There's mind control procedures with intimidation, fear, hypnosis, and drugs administered. There's in-depth interrogations and debriefing procedures. You can be roughed up and physically abused. There's medical and genetic procedures, exploratory surgery, and possible cloning. Implants are being removed and inserted by humans, where you can have a military abduction. You can have an alien implant removed, or you can have a human one put in. I've had many accounts of both. There's testing and demonstration of psychic and paranormal abilities, where it seems that that's part of this. I'll get into more of that in just a minute here.
Well, we're going to have to start taking some phone calls here in just a moment.
Yeah, we will. We will. And then
we have too soon.
I'm sorry?
We have too soon.
Okay, well,
we're going to run out of show.
Just two more things I want to cover is that there's the last thing on that list was people can then be have intelligence insiders in their lives where they're then befriended by people who have backgrounds or are insiders who are presenting themselves in that way, and a lot of abductees are befriended by these individuals in their day-to-day lives. And then the last thing I want to say is you had asked me a question earlier about the technology stuff, about that being one of the reasons this is happening to people. And yes, that's one of the reasons. Along with the technology is, as I started to say, the development of psychic abilities, their testing and development of that, and medical information and genetics. That's one of the major other areas that these covert ops are interested in. And then last but not least, in fact, it's probably first and foremost actually on this list of why they're doing this, is alien agenda and motives. The abductees are questioned about, you know, what is the alien agenda? What are the alien motives? Why are they taking you? Why are they taking other people? Why are they here? What are they doing? Abductees all report being interrogated about alien agenda and motives. And of course, the technology, as we discussed earlier, abductees are then interrogated about alien technology. What have you seen? Have you had hands-on? Have you flown it? Have you navigated it? Have you been shown weaponry? You know, it can be specific technical questioning, or it can be very general. Most of the abductees with these experiences say that they're also questioned about the technology. So that's it. That's everything I wanted to cover. Thank you.
All right, to the telephone. And by the way, folks, let me give you the telephone number. The main number here and in the studio is 623-444-5889. And toll-free at 888-223-4599. The toll-free number will work in the USA and Canada. The regular number, the main number, 623-444-5889, that works worldwide, but is not toll-free. So if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can use our flash message option on my website. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, this is Mike from Kentucky.
Yes, Mike.
Hey, Melinda, were you at Norio Hayakawa Symposium on April 30th through May the 2nd, 1993 at Rachel?
I'm not sure. I do know Norio, and in 93, in about those years, I have been out at Rachel, so I can't place if I was at that one for sure, but it's likely that I was.
Were you, do you know Michael Contreras?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah,
very
he was one of the guys that came out there. I came from Kentucky to that lecture, and several of us stayed in a little motel in Alamo.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you remember that or not.
Yes, I do.
Well, hello.
Yes, I do. I certainly do.
been a long time since I talked to you.
And what is your name, sir?
Mike Crystal.
Okay. That sounds vaguely familiar.
We spent some time out there at the Black Mailbox, and Michael drove his van.
I think I do vaguely remember you, yes.
Yeah, well, I'm vague, that's for sure. But I've lost contact
with
you and Michael, and what was the other guy's name, the one that did the hypnotherapy?
Bill
Alamo,
Hamilton?
Pardon me? No,
Bill
not
Hamilton.
Bill.
Oh.
No, no, one of your friends.
Oh, a friend of mine named Steve would have probably also been there.
Yeah, that's probably who it was, and he did a hypnosis session with me there.
Steve doesn't do hypnosis.
Anyway, I dropped you an email. I just wanted to talk to you.
Yeah, no, Steve, the Steve I mentioned doesn't do hypnosis. So.
Oh, it's a different one then. But I have the videotape where we did this, so I guess I could look at that and see who it was. But I wrote you an email.
Oh, I know who you're referring to. Maybe Sean. Sean might have done hypnosis on you.
That's a possibility.
Okay.
But that's a long time ago, so.
Yes.
I've been trying to get in touch with you guys for several years now, and I've lost track with all of you.
Well, you can click the link on her on her picture. Just click her picture on my website, and it's linked to her website, and it's got her email address. Michael, got to run along. I want to thank you for the call.
On my website, under contacts, I can be emailed.
Yeah. All right, from Columbia, we have a flash message. Peter says, on your website, Melinda, you have a drawing that shows a reptilian with a tail in a tank. Wires are coming out of the back of its head and spine and going into a human on the outside of the tank. There appears to be a human doctor as well. Can you share the story that goes with this picture?
Well, I have to admit that... another researcher who I had joined up with in the past, that was from one of her cases. I'm not ultimately familiar with that particular story, other than I have that picture there as an example of people seeing reptilian in these situations as well sometimes. So some of the abductees claim when they see aliens in these underground installations, as an example, or wherever the facility may be, if they see aliens, of course, grays are seen, but often reptilians are also seen.
All right.
As an example of that, precisely what is taking place in that picture, I have to admit, I'm not sure, other than what it says on the picture, and that it shows that a person and a reptilian somehow are mentally linked up, and there's some kind of mind transfer thing. That's just what's demonstrated in the picture. Beyond that, I really don't know.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Sam from Lake Havasu City. How you doing?
I am doing well, Sam. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Melinda?
Doing good.
Good. Listen, Melinda, a couple of things caught my attention. I've seen a little bit of your work, and I've... You know, I'm a crash researcher myself on just about every subject in the paranormal, just because it gives me something to do. but you said that you on one of your abductions, you said you were in a bed and you said there was a Navy guy there, and he was dressed in green with all the bells and whistles and everything on. Is that correct?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I'm just curious because you know that's what's caught me right off the bat, because there is no green Navy dress. There's a khaki and there's a blue, but there's a khaki and there's a blue, but as far as a full dress...
I have a naval catalog that, after I described that uniform, a friend of mine who's in Naval Reserves, this was many years ago, I'm actually out of contact with the person, but I was friends at the time with someone who was in active Naval Reserves, and he had to constantly order new parts for his uniforms and stuff. And he gave me one of the catalogs he had for ordering stuff. And there in the catalog is a naval dark green uniform that is almost identical to what I saw. The only difference is the hat is a little different. But I ended up asking around with some people in the military and described the hat I saw And they said the hat I saw was someone with a much higher rank than anything in that, that catalog that person probably wouldn't order from or whatever. It didn't, or, you know, you could probably order it, but there wasn't a picture demonstrating it. So the person, I forget what the rank of the person in the picture was, but the person I saw obviously had a higher rank because he had more dew depth on his hat. There was more gold on his hat.
So you're saying that the Navy does have in their catalog this green uniform?
I have this official Navy uniform catalog with those dark green uniforms in it. Yeah, and it's when I say dress, I just mean it's the full jacket and pants that you have all the pins on. So I'm not sure. Maybe dress is an appropriate word.
All right, we have to take a break, and we will be back right after this. We are back, and we're on final approach. We have about 8 or 9 minutes left, and we'll have to call this one a wrap. So if you plan on calling, you need to, if you've been sitting there thinking, I want to call, now's the time. Okay, to the telephone, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, my name's Kathy. I live in Las Vegas.
Hi, Kathy.
I wanted to say that, hi, I love your show.
Thank you.
And Melinda's story is very compelling, and I could totally understand why someone would want to be curious and go up with the aliens and stuff, but I have a hard time trying to understand how someone would let people repeatedly break into their house. Like, I would definitely get a gun, I'd get some big dogs, because you have a right to sovereignty of your own body. And no one has the right to do that to you. So I just wondered if, Melinda, you ever tried resisting these people.
Yes, actually. Not only have I tried to resist in my own case, but I've had some cases. One gentleman who resisted one of the guards in his experience where he actually, in the experience, had the presence of mind and enough of a conscious state to tell one of the guards, again, short sleeve, tan uniform, naval guard, the guy, was mistreating him or something, so the guy having the experience told him off. The guard waited till everybody he was in a room, I guess on an examination table or something, and the guard waited till everyone had left the room, went back in when the guy was supposed to be alone in this room, apparently went back in and punched him in the groin, and from the blunt force trauma, the abductee actually got a hernia and ended up, after his experience and everything, going to the doctor and having x-rays and a medical report and everything showing he had the blunt force trauma causing a hernia. And this was because he told me he'd actually been punched in the groin in the experience because he resisted. I didn't have a guy hit me. I tried to kick a guy in an experience, and I was sitting on a table, and it's a long story, but the way the guy was treating me, this guy turned around, and I tried to kick him in the leg, and he turned around and karate chopped my arm. Now, not like he deliberately tried to hit me, but like he was blocking my kick. And I got a heck of a bruise from that. But a couple other times, and other abductees have done this too. So in these experiences, people have resisted. It usually doesn't go over real well. as far as resisting being taken from your home, first off, not everyone's taken from their home. I have a lot of cases of people who've been taken while driving. In these military involvement experiences, they can take you, from wherever, And but if someone has been taken from their home, often there's not sign of a break-in. That's rare. I mean, there are break-ins to homes and stuff. It's more like people having their files taken or something, where their home or their office may be broken into, and their files or their journals about their experience. I know a hypnotherapist who had a couple of cases. She worked with people having this. She had huge files of abduction files and this, and when her office was broken into, none of the abduction files were taken, just the MyLab files were the only ones taken.
But what about having a really big, bad dog, and then when the guys in camouflage uniform show up to take you out of your room, they have to contend with Bruno?
Well, abductees have tried different things. With these covert ops experiences, if they want to take you, they will. If they can't take you from your home because you've beefed up the security of your home and you've bought a big dog and you have a big shotgun and everything, then they're going to wait and take you if they really need you for whatever reason. If they want to interrogate you about alien technology and they really want with the information they think you have, they're going to wait till you're driving on a road trip somewhere. And you're going to be stopped by a roadblock, and you're going to think it's the police, and they're going to get you out of your car. And next thing you know, you're given heavy-duty drugs, and you're escorted off in some van or vehicle or on some helicopter, mm-hmm. and you're flown to an underground base. And you know, but it's the amount of drugs and the mind control procedures they do. Unfortunately, there's very little that can be done to overcome that. People have tried. People have resisted. I know people who've bought guns to protect themselves, who've beefed up their security, and, you know, and if they really want to take you, they're going to wait for the right opportunity to do so. And unfortunately, it's the same thing with alien abduction. There's, mm-hmm. People do resist. I want to reassure people. They absolutely do. You've got to have the presence of mind and the consciousness to be able to do it.
We have a flash message from Bob in Australia, and we've only got a couple of minutes left here. But he says, my question to Melinda is, Melinda, do you know if the extraterrestrials are going to show themselves full scale, or will there be a full scale global contact in the coming months? Do you know anything about that?
No, I'm not aware of anything like that that's going to happen. You know, people always are saying stuff like, well, you know, Kevin, you know, in all the years we've been in ufology, people will make these claims that, oh, you know, there's going to be a huge, massive, you know, showing or a landing or whatever, and pretty much the track record on it is pretty bad, that nothing ever happens, with the exception of down in Mexico where the people are having huge amounts of sightings, and now I hear that same kind of activity is happening in Turkey. we need those. Yeah, I look forward to when we have the kind of sightings here in the U.S. that they have in Mexico City. I just saw Jaime Musan give another presentation, and he showed footage of literally thousands of things in the sky. I mean, literally thousands. It's so remarkable. And if anyone out there hasn't seen it, check out the stuff by Jaime Musan. If you start, you know, searching for it on YouTube, I think you'll find it. Although, you know, it's definitely buyer beware on YouTube because there's a lot of nonsense out there too. I've not heard of anything as far as any mass showing or the aliens are going to show up or something. And I also, I know a lot of people are doing disclosure efforts, which I applaud all those efforts. I'm not one of those people that thinks disclosure is going to happen anytime soon. And my research suggests something very different, that, you know, that they do not have plans to disclose anytime soon.
Hmm. Interesting. You know, one of the things, and I have to do this quick, but one of the things that we hear a lot, and you've been hearing this for years, I have too, well, if UFOs are real, if extraterrestrials are real, why don't they just land on the White House lawn? And, of course, I immediately wonder, well, why would they care about the White House? I mean, you know. But, you know, the fact is, maybe they tried. In 1952, on two successive weekends, they flew, a fleet of them flew over the U.S. Capitol, and we sent fighter jets up to intercept them. So maybe they were trying to land on the White House lawn and decided that might be a little bit unhealthy.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very famous series of sightings that happened over, you know, over Capitol Hill. It's very famous, and you know, you're right, maybe they were trying to land, but at the very least, there was a strong showing.
Yeah.
And our reaction wasn't good.
Yeah, it wouldn't be very healthy to land in a hail of fire.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
It wouldn't be healthy to try to land in a hail of fire. Melinda, we're out of time. Thank you for being with me. It's been fascinating.
Well, we barely scratched the surface, as I'm sure you're aware.
Yeah, but we only have 2 hours, so we had to do it quick.
Yeah, I understand. It goes by quick. I also, you know, I spent so much talking about my own experiences that I didn't really talk that much about the experiences of others, but maybe next time.
All right, just stay on the phone with me for a moment. And I'd like to talk with you after we go off the air. Okay, folks, don't forget, if you're not a member, now's the time to join. 23 cents a day, $6.95 a month. You can't beat it. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. And you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.